7, Stan Phillips.
Mansions of glory and suicide machines sprung from cages on highway nine, torn with human ticket and stepping out over the line.
Good morning, Met fans. How you doing on this glorious Monday? Well, we won another series. We split the doubleheader yesterday, and now we have won another series, this time once again against our beloved, arch-rival, the Philadelphia Phillies. Hope you all had a happy Mother's Day, and to be honest with you, mine was pretty good too. On a baseball sense, it was good because it's always good to win a nightcap. You go home happy. And Pete Alonso put on a power display to warm up the cold Met fans who were in Philadelphia. I don't know if you were watching the game or not, but it seemed like there were a hell of a lot more Met fans there at the end of the game, too, than there were Philly fans. And if I were a Philly fan, too, I wouldn't want to be sitting through that, too. I'm not a big fan of cold weather games to begin with. I dread those night games at Citi Field when I go in April and May. It's just too damn cold. But that's one of the things that you have to deal with when you're in northeastern seaboard here. Those cold midweek games. I remember back in the day, back in April, all those afternoon weekday games were afternoon games. But right now, TV rules, and TV is more profitable, I guess. More eyeballs watch TV when the games are at night. So you're basically just a studio audience there at that time if you're going to the game in April and May or on these frigid cold days. But before I digress and start talking about that more, let's get to the game itself. I guess the proper way to start is just with game one itself. And we can basically say the Mets didn't have a comeback this time around for the second time against the Phillies as they fell in game one of the Sunday doubleheader 3-2 at good old Citizens Bank Park. Now, Max Scherzer didn't have his stuff in this one, and the Phillies jumped on it. Bryce Harper was the one to do so first, smashing a poorly placed fastball over the right field wall to make it a 1-0 lead for the Phillies. Then Harper did it again, taking a high fastball to center field for an RBI single. Scherzer allowed three straight two-out hits. He would finish the game, though, with just three earned runs on another RBI hit in the bottom of the fourth, giving up 10 total hits and striking out 7 over 6 innings. Now, the Mets made things more interesting in the top of the sixth. They had only two hits to this point, and they were both eradicated, by double plays from the next batter. James McCann couldn't make things better by not grounding into a double play with runners on first and third with no outs, but a run came across the board. Then Francisco Lindor double-homed Brandon Nimmo, came flying around the bases all the way from first to make it 3-2. The ball just missed getting out down the right field line, but Lindor will take that. In the top of the seventh, the Mets couldn't capitalize on yet another opportunity. Back-to-back walks were issued by Seranthony Dominguez, but he'd strike out the next three batters to leave the inning unscathed. Now, the Mets' bullpen really didn't help their chances of a potential comeback, as Joey Rodriguez and Adam Ottavino led up one hit combined and didn't allow a run to come across. And to be honest with you, I think I had a hunch that Rodriguez and Ottavino would be the weak points of the bullpen this year. And so far, they haven't convinced me otherwise, especially Ottavino. He's disappointed me even more than I thought he might. But you got to give it time. Relievers are a funny bunch. They're very flaky, and they can turn it on and off at any time. So can't give up on either one of those. Pete Alonso, Eduardo Escobar, and Dom Smith went down 1-2-3 in the top of the ninth inning to seal the Phillies' victory. And that was it. That was all she wrote. Now, the one unfortunate byproduct of the game yesterday was the fact that Max Scherzer's unbeaten streak ended at 24 starts. It was a heck of a run. He took the loss on Sunday to the Philadelphia Phillies, ending his unbeaten streak to 24 consecutive starts, and that dated back almost a year ago to May 30th, 2021. Heck of a run, and everything basically has to fall in place for that, for something like that to happen. The team has to do well. The pitcher has to do well. But that's not taking anything away from Max's accomplishment. A pitcher has to pitch no matter how good the team is supporting him at that point. So hats off to Max on one hell of a streak. Every time he goes out there, he gives the Mets a chance to win and go deep into a ball game. And over the past handful of starts, he's been doing that, giving them a chance to win, and they're picking him up all the time. He hasn't been spot on with his stuff, but good enough that the Mets can actually carry him. Wins are a team stat, and Max has as much to do with it as the team. But yesterday was just one of those days. The Mets didn't hit enough, and Max didn't pitch like Max. So occasionally you're going to lose games like that. And it took a while to get this loss in. Don't forget we had two rainouts. So Max was working on extra rest, and we know how amped up he can get. So maybe that had something to do with it. But the conditions, let's face it, in Philly were less than ideal yesterday with the cold, the cool, the wind. It was basically, you could see that even Scherzer was having difficulty gripping the ball. And when he made his pitches, it seemed like the Philly hitters could only hit soft flares into the outfield. Today was a grind for Max. And he was just trying to navigate through the lineup. He did make a mistake to Bryce Harper. But overall, he was executing his pitches. In the game of baseball, hits are going to fall. And the good thing about Max is he didn't really hurt himself anymore by walking anybody. He kept his pitch count round. So he'd go out there for the six and try and give it some type of length. And in a doubleheader, that's what you need. You need a pitcher to give you innings. And you could see Max wasn't happy about not winning. He's always got his mind going. He's always trying to rework things, and he doesn't beat himself up, even though it seems like he beats himself up. I think it's more of a mental thing with him. He has a habit, and he has said this, that he takes away the good from the start. And so from every start that he makes, he learns from it. And that's a good thing. For a man his age, he is in such great condition. And I guess that you couldn't ask for more than Max pitching six innings in a doubleheader. The Mets had balls that were hit hard that were caught. The Phillies had balls that weren't that fell. It's just one of those days. And Scherzer and the Mets, when you're a good team, you don't make excuses. He did give up 3 runs on 10 hits. The weather, like I said, wasn't ideal. He had extra days off. But I think Max even knows that you have to adapt to anything. And he's not one to make excuses. His job is to compete and win under any circumstances and conditions. Now, he will look to start another unbeaten streak. Wouldn't that be nice? Against the Seattle Mariners later this week. Now, after losing Game 1, the Met offense woke up to defeat the Phillies 6-1 in Game 2 to split the doubleheader. Our good buddy Pete the Polar Bear Alonso got the Mets on board early with a 2-run home run in the first inning off a young starter, Christopher Sanchez. The Polar Bear would hit another, this time a 3-run shot to give the Mets a 5-1 lead in the fifth. Alonso went 3-for-5 in the game with 2 homers and 5 total RBIs. And when Pete hits, the Mets seem to win. And Chris Bassitt took the mound for the Mets, and with a lead, the right-hander was effective for the Amazons. With the weather cold and windy, Bassitt was able to locate his curveball, and that's a good thing when you're Bassitt, and he painted the corners with his fastball and off-speed stuff. He even worked around a questionable balk call that extended an at-bat in the first inning. Now, after giving up a solo shot to Gene Segura in the second inning, Bassitt would scatter Philly runners through 5 2/3 innings. The first year Met threw a season-high 101 pitches, giving up just 1 run, 1 walk, 5 hits, while striking out 4, and picking up the win to go 4-2 this season. The only other Met run came via a wild pitch that scored J.D. Davis in the sixth. The inning started with a Thomas Nito double, which was followed by a Davis single. Unfortunately, Nito was tagged trying to go from first to third. Jeff McNeil and Starling Marte both struck out to end the inning. The Mets bullpen did its job with Chasen Shreve, Drew Smith, and Seth Lugo, combining for 3 1/3 shutout innings. So the nightcap was much better. And like I said, I always like to win the nightcap. It just gives you a good feeling. And let's face it, it's tough to win a doubleheader. They're sweet when you do win it, but you don't want to get swept. So the Mets got the series win. They split the doubleheader.
And I'm happy, and I think you guys should be happy about that. Now, speaking of the polar bear, he says he's had to adjust since the book's been out on him. Now, if you've watched enough Met games like I have, you probably noticed something different in Pete Alonso. He's still hitting monster home runs like the two he hit in the team's 6-1 win over the Phillies on Sunday afternoon, but he's having less games with no hits and has even started to hit the ball the other way seemingly more often. He said that he feels like he has pretty decent bat to ball, and he puts a lot of stuff in play hard consistently, and he's committed to the zone really well, and he just wants to be able to continue that. The approach has helped Alonso to a .276 batting average, which is 20 points higher than his career average, and a .357 average over the last 7 games. In the second game of Sunday's doubleheader, Alonso went 3-for-5 with the aforementioned 2 home runs and drove in 5 RBIs. His second hit of the game, a single to center field, is really what's encapsulating Alonso's approach so far this season. Just taking whatever the opposing teams gives him, he seems to hit the ball to the big parts of the field, and this year it's happened a lot early in the season. And the pitchers are smart. They're not giving him many drivable pitches that you want to get on the big hit for the home run or a double in the gap. So he's basically, and you can see this, he's stayed within himself, and he's just putting quality swings on good pitches. And going to right field, almost like Aaron Judge does, is a product of having a plan and not getting too big. And guys who drive in big runs can do that. That's why they're the good hitters they are. You try to crowd him, and if you don't get it far enough in, he's going to do that to you, it looks like. And that's a good thing. That's a maturation of a hitter. And at age 27, it looks like Pete is really coming into that maturation stage. He is a home run hitter. He's a 2-time home run derby winner, after all. And while he still gives his team plenty of those home runs, he knows he can do a lot more for the team in the fourth season of baseball with the Mets. The book is out on him, and he's been around now, and teams don't want to give up the home run ball, so he's been able to adjust and have a good disciplined approach. And going the other way, being disciplined, taking walks, or putting a good quality swings on the ball in the zone keeps a rally going and lets the other batters get good pitches to hit. And when Alonso does well, the Mets do well. The team is the first to win 20 games this season, has won 8 of its first 9 series. The one non-win was a split with the defending champion Atlanta Braves. Like I said, the Mets are the first team to win 20 games. Now, Mother Nature may have delayed it a few days, but they did become the first team to win 20 games, and for that, they should be applauded. The feat is impressive, considering the Mets have done it before the defending champion Braves and the high-powered Dodgers. While it's still very early in the season, this Met team does feel different. Getting off to such a hot start that has their fans and baseball pundits believing 2022 could be a magical one in Queens. But the team has eyes on bigger prizes. Yeah, Alonso says, that's great, but we want to win the division. For us, we had a great start. We ran the bases well, hit well, and our pitching staff, whether it be starters or bullpen, we played such great team baseball. Everyone's answered the bell, and everyone's doing an incredible job and working incredibly well. And it's so fun to play with these guys, and that's what they want to do. But like I said, this season does feel different. It looks different, too. While some of the main cast have returned, like Alonso and Lindor, it's the new faces that really infuse this bunch with a sense of legitimacy that has seemingly been lacking in recent years. And let's start with the man at the top, Buck Showalter. His experience and keen eye for the game has changed the culture of the Mets. The fundamentals and tenacity is on full display each game, but the 65-year-old continues to downplay his influence while giving credit to his players. Showalter said, good players with good makeup. It's just something our guys take each day and stay in the moment. Now, the Mets are 20-10 and have not lost a series this season, winning 8 and splitting 1. But the more impressive stat is that they've lost 2 or more games in a row just once this season. A big reason for that is rotation led by blockbuster signing of Max Scherzer and the trade for Chris Bassitt. Now, when they traded for Bassitt, they were looking at the pitcher they got. This is something he has done for the last couple of years. He doesn't go out there and try to beat a big stud on the mound. He just does the job. And he's got uber competitiveness, just like Max Scherzer, too. And the beauty of all this is the Mets have 5 quality starters. And when you have 5 quality starters, it's relentless. every game the Mets are in it. The bats are the bats. They'll do well. They're not probably the best hitting lineup in baseball. They're definitely one of the top third, and that'll play out during the course of the year. It's great 1 through 9, but the guys on the mound 1 through 5, they may be the best in baseball. Now, that rotation, believe it or not, is still missing their ace, Jacob DeGrom, who's expected to return to the team sometime this season. But without him, the Mets have continued to win and stay atop the National League East. And every week that passes, every time through the rotation, that division title seems to be more and more attainable. Now, we should note that the Mets released Robinson Cano, and he is officially released. So the Robinson Cano era is over, and he is free to pursue whatever he wants to pursue in the next phase of his career. Now, the Mets released the veteran infielder on Sunday, 6 days after he was designated for assignment by the team. During his DFA stint, Cano could have been traded or accepted a minor league assignment with the club. Now, as a free agent, he can sign anywhere. The Mets owe the 39-year-old Cano roughly $37 million through next season. Talk about hitting the lottery. Any team that wants Cano can sign him for the major league minimum of $700,000 prorated for the remainder of the season. The Mets would have that amount deducted from what they owe Cano. The Mariners are paying Cano another $7 million as part of the agreement in the trade that sent the second baseman to the Mets with Edwin Diaz before the 2019 season. Now, Cano was dumped by the Mets last week as MLB roster shrunk from 28 players to 26. In 12 games, he owned a 195, 233, 268 slash line with one homer and three RBIs after missing all last season following a second career PED suspension. And on his Twitter account Sunday, Robinson posted a video of himself working out with the message, "Never stop, never settle. Hashtag training." Now, the Mets selected reliever Steven Nogosic from the AAA Syracuse and option Adonis Medina, who was available in the Mets' 6-1 nightcap victory as the 27th player. Nogosic's spot on the 40-man roster was created by Sean Reed Foley's move to the 60-day injured list with a torn ulnar collateral ligament. Joey Rodriguez pitched a scoreless seventh inning with 3 strikeouts, including Bryce Harper, in the Mets' 3-2 game 1 loss. The left-hander is not allowed an earned run in his last 7 appearances, which is pretty good. I'm still not convinced, but hey, I've been wrong before about Joey and other players. So hopefully he does the Mets see things I don't, and I will gladly say I am wrong. Now, Carlos Carrasco will be pitching on 6 days rest when he gets the ball on Tuesday to face the Nationals. The right-hander is coming off his strongest outing of the season, in which he pitched 8 shutout innings against the Braves last Tuesday in the nightcap of a doubleheader. Carrasco faced the Nationals on April 10th and surrendered 1 run over 5 2/3 innings. And on this day in Met history, 2 Mets were born. Jerry Buchek was born this date in 1942, and Aaron Harang was born this date in 1978. And on this date also, the Mets traded Hobie Landreth to the Baltimore Orioles for marvelous Marv Thornberry, a legend, Marv Thornberry. And on this date in 1984, the Mets released Craig Swan, one of the more understated pitchers in Met history. Craig Swan had quite an arm, one of the best in baseball during his era. And the Mets claimed Mark Dewey on waivers from the San Francisco Giants on this date in 1991. And on this date in 2001, the Mets signed free agent Doug Winton. And on this date in 2007, the Mets signed free agent Brian Lawrence. So there you have it. There's all your transactions for this day. Okay, now it's time to talk about the greatest Met baseball group there is on Facebook, New York Mets Baseball Way of Life. And that's our Facebook companion to this podcast. So if you're not a member of that group, check us out on Facebook. Join. Great stuff there every day. You'll enjoy the content and be glad you joined. And if you're listening to this podcast, please do subscribe. You'll be alerted every time a new one is up and loaded. We do one daily, and you'll be able to listen in and enjoy your Met experience on a daily basis. And if you ever need to reach out to me with any comments, questions, suggestions, concerns, whatever it may be, please send your correspondence to me at philstan41@gmail.com. I'll be glad to answer all your email, as I always do. Now let's talk about what's going on in the group, shall we? As always, we're going to give you the trivia question and Jeopardy question of the day. Here is the trivia question of the day. On July 4th, 1985, the Mets and Braves staged a classic 19-inning game won by the Mets 16-13. Who threw the final pitch of this game? At 3:55 a.m. And the two clues for Jeopardy? Traded by the New York Mets to the Houston Astros with Roger Cedeno and Kyle Kessel in exchange for Derek Bell and Mike Hampton on December 23, 1999. The winning pitcher in the 1999 National League Championship Series Game 5 against the Atlanta Braves. Those are your two clues. Lock them in, and we'll be back to talk about it in just a few minutes. But let's talk about what else may be going on in the group these days. With a doubleheader, we had a lot to talk about. Great stuff. As always, Mike Fried came up clutch. He even said, what a way to end Mother's Day, and I agree. The Mets split their doubleheader. The Mets lose the first, not much hitting, also leaving some runners in scoring position. Max didn't have his best outing, but was considered good because most of his hits were basic. Mike the McCann handled him good and showed his cannon. Game two was the power. Pete with two bombs and others contributed. Lindor, Marte, Nito. Another series win. That's 8 of 9 so far with the one even series with the Braves. So the Mets haven't lost a series well yet. Mike says, you're welcome. People thought I was nuts. Well, look at that. My prediction was spot on. Off one game two to the rainout. First team with 21 wins. Well done. Oh, who has the top two pitchers in New York? The Mets. McGill and Bassett. Not Cole. Add Scherzer in the mix for the era. Next up, yes, the Washington Nationals. Then we showed a picture of Mike Piazza, unfortunately, walking dejectedly off the field after the Yankees won the 2000 World Series. Yeah, got to deal with the good and the bad, and that's what we do in the group. So check us out. You won't be disappointed when you do. Like I said, great stuff up there every day. And now we want to talk about former Met Aaron Harang. We like to give biographical summaries of all the ex-Met players. And Aaron Harang was briefly a Met. But when we do these, we like to give you the whole skinny on a guy's career. And you guys have been appreciated. Now, Aaron Harang was a starting pitcher. He played for the A's, the Reds, the Padres, Dodgers, Mariners, Phillies, and the Braves, including our beloved Metsies in 2013. Now, he graduated from Patrick Henry High School and went on to San Diego State University. He was first drafted by the Boston Red Sox in the 22nd round of the 1996 amateur draft, but did not sign with the team. In 1998, he played collegiate summer baseball with the Kodiak Kettlers of the Cape Cod Baseball League. Now, after college, Harang was drafted by the Texas Rangers in the 6th round of the 1999 draft, and he signed with them. He played for the rookie-class Pulaski Rangers in 1999, finishing with a 9-2 record and a 2.30 ERA in 16 appearances, which was basically 10 starts and 6 relief appearances, including one complete game shutout. He was selected as the Appalachian League Pitcher of the Year and made the postseason All-Star team. In 2000, with the Charlotte Rangers, he was 13-5 with a 3.32 ERA in 27 starts and was selected as a Florida State League All-Star. Now, in 2000, Harang was traded with minor leaguer Ryan Cohen to the Oakland A's for Randy Velarde. He played with the AA Midland Rockhounds in 2001, and he started 27 games with a 10-8 record and a 4.14 ERA. Harang made his Major League debut for the A's on May 25, 2002 against the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. He pitched 7 shutout innings in his debut with 10 strikeouts to record the win. He started 15 games for the team that season and also made one relief appearance. He finished 5-4 with a 4.83 ERA. In 2003, he started 6 games with a 1-3 record and a 5.34 ERA. Now, during the 2003 season, Harang was traded to the Reds along with Joe Valentin and minor leaguer Jeff Berkish for Jose Guillen. In 2004, he went 10-9 with a 4.83 ERA for the Reds. In 2005, he led the team in wins, quality starts, innings pitch, and strikeouts, all of which were career highs for him. He came the first Red pitcher with 200 innings in a season since right-hander Elmer Dessens led the staff with 2,005 innings in 2001. He received votes for NL Pitcher of the Month in May after going 3-1 with a 1.93 ERA over five starts. In the 2006 season, Harang pitched on opening day for the Reds on April 3rd against the Cubs and allowed six earned runs over five innings. In his third start of the season, 11 days after opening day, Harang pitched seven shutout innings against the Cardinals, who were starting 2005 Cy Young Award winner Chris Carpenter. Harang would give up four hits, four strikeouts, and also had the only hit of the game as the Reds won 1-0. Harang also pitched a complete game shutout against the Brewers on April 23rd, when he allowed just five hits as the Reds won 11-0. In the 2006 season, Harang led the National League in complete games with six and strikeouts for 216, and he surpassed Jake Peavy's strikeout total of 215, I should say, in the regular season game. Harang was also the most consistent pitcher on the Reds' 2006 staff. He was only the ninth pitcher since 1960 to lead the National League in both wins and strikeouts. Now, that has occurred 12 times in baseball history. However, he did not receive any votes for the Cy Young Award winner, that award that year went to Brandon Webb, and all previous pitchers that led the National League in both categories had won the award. On February 6, 2007, Harang signed a four-year, $36.5 million contract with the Reds. On July 23, 2007, Harang threw 10 innings for the Reds, throwing 121 pitches, becoming the first Reds pitcher to do so since 1989. However, he received a no decision because the Reds did not win the game until the 12th inning. On September 3, 2007, he became the 3,000th strikeout recorded by New York Mets' Pedro Martinez. Harang ended the season with an NL-leading 4.19 strikeout-to-walk ratio and 12 wild pitches. In 2008, he led the majors in home runs, giving up with 19. In the second inning game at Wrigley Field in Chicago against the Cubs on July 24, 2009, Harang hit his first career home run, a three-run shot off of pitcher Randy Wells. He missed the end of the 2009 baseball season after undergoing an emergency appendectomy. He ended the year with a 4.21 ERA, 1.41 WHIP, and a 6-14 record. Now, on September 10, 2010, it was announced that Harang would be sent to the bullpen due to ineffectiveness. He had a 5.32 ERA at the time, and having been on the DL for 2 months due to back spasms. In a ceremonial goodbye, he started the final game of the season against the Brewers, but exited after three innings with a blister on his finger. Harang was left off the Reds' 2010 playoff roster. On November 3, 2010, the Reds bought out Harang of his 2011 contract option, making him a free agent. Now, on December 6, 2010, Harang signed a one-year deal with the San Diego Padres. The deal included a mutual option for 2012. On July 9, 2011, Harang had a no-hitter through six innings against the Dodgers, but was pulled after walking three and throwing 95 pitches. He made 28 starts in 2011 with a 14-7 record, I should say, and 3.64 ERA for the Padres, who chose not to pick up his 2012 option, making him a free agent. Now, on December 8, 2011, Harang signed a two-year contract with the LA Dodgers with a mutual option for 2014. On April 13, 2012, Harang struck out nine consecutive batters after giving up a single to set the all-time Dodgers record against the San Diego Padres. The record was previously held by Johnny Padres with eight in 1962. The streak was stopped by Will Venable when he hit an opposite field home run. Harang finished one strikeout short of tying Tom Seaver's major league record of 10 in a row in 1970 and tied his career high with 13 total strikeouts in the game. On June 7, 2012, Harang allowed three runs in six innings and 8-3 victory over the Phillies to collect his 100th career major league win. In 31 starts for the Dodgers in 2012, he finished 10-10 with a 3.61 ERA. On April 6, 2013, Harang was traded to the Colorado Rockies in exchange for Ramon Hernandez. The Rockies designated him for assignment on April 11th, traded him to Seattle Mariners in exchange for minor leaguer Stephen Hensley. In 22 starts, he was 5-11 with a 5.76 ERA. He was designated for assignment on August 26, 2013, and released on September 1st. Now, here's where his Met career comes into play. Shortly after his release by the Mariners, Harang was signed to a minor league contract by the Mets and assigned to AAA Las Vegas 51s. Harang joined the Mets for the last few weeks of the season, was surprisingly effective. While he was 0-1 with the Mets, he pitched to a 3.52 ERA and struck out 26 batters in 23 innings pitched. Harang became a free agent after the season. On February 15, 2014, Harang signed a minor league contract with the Cleveland Indians. He was released by the Indians and signed a one-year major league contract with the Braves. After his four starts with the Braves, Harang posted a 0.70 ERA, the lowest in the National League. Harang then became the first pitcher since Pedro Martinez in 1997 to start a season with five starts of at least six-plus innings and one or more fewer runs allowed. He went 12-12 with a 3.57 ERA over 33 starts for the Braves in 2014 and finished ninth in the National League with 204 and one-third innings pitched. On January 5, 2015, the Phillies announced they had signed Harang to a one-year $5 million contract that included performance bonuses. Harang didn't have a great year. He finished 6-15 with a 4.86 ERA and 29 starts for the Phillies. He had the lowest percentage of balls pulled against him, 31.7 among major league pitchers. Now, in his career, if you remember, Harang threw six pitches. He was a novelty in that regard. He had a four-seam fastball and two-seam fastball averaging about 90 to 94 miles per hour. He also threw a slider, a changeup in the low 80s, and a curveball in the low to mid 70s, as well as a small handful of cutters. Harang mostly used his four-seamer and slider against right-handed hitters while using more variety with left-handed hitters. His curve was typically used early in the count, often against lefties. And yes, he was a Met. Once a Met, always a Met. Now let's talk about Jerry Buchek, shall we? He was a middle infielder and third baseman who played for the Cards and our beloved Mets over all or parts of seven seasons spanning 1961 to 68. He threw and batted right-handed, stood 5'11" and weighed 185 pounds, and he was born, appropriately enough, in St. Louis, Missouri, where he played for the Cardinals. He signed a $59,000 bonus contract with his hometown Cardinals upon graduation from McKinley High School. He began his professional career as an 18-year-old at the highest levels of minor league baseball, splitting the 60 season between the AA and AAA. He got his first taste of major league action in June 1961 and spent part of 1963 with the Cardinals before making the big league roster in 1964 and spending five consecutive full seasons in the majors. In 64, Buchek played in only 35 games, largely as a backup to shortstop Dick Rowe and second baseman Julian Javier, and he collected six hits and 30 at-bats. It was a memorable season as the Cardinals prevailed in late September. It was a 14 pennant race, and the Cardinals won their first division title in 18 years. They then went on to defeat the Bronx Bombers in the World Series in seven games. Buchek appeared as defensive replacement in four games at second base, and in his low plate appearance in Game 6, he singled off Ball 4 author Jim Bowden. Now, Buchek remained with the Cardinals as a backup middle infielder in 65 and 66, appearing in 55 games and 100 games, respectively. However, with Grote and then Dale Maxville, Javier established the Redbirds' double combination, and he did not break into the regular lineup. He started a total of 69 games at shortstop and 20 at second base during those two seasons. On May 12, 1966, he scored the first run ever at Busch Memorial Stadium. On the eve of the 67 campaign, Buchek was traded to the Mets, who were seeking a new second baseman after trading four-year veteran Ron Hunt to the Dodgers. The Mets general manager Bing Devine had signed Buchek when he was the front office boss of the Cardinals in 1960, so he was sticking with something familiar, was Mr. Devine. In 67, with our Metropolitans, Buchek started 92 games at second base, along with 14 at third and 5 at shortstop. And he did set personal bests in games played, 124, hits 97, home runs 14, and RBIs 41. Among Met fans, he was known for starting an improbable comeback with victory against the Braves on July 9, 1967. Down 4-3 in the bottom ninth with two outs and nobody on base,
Uchek batting 230 was sent in to pinch hit for Bud Harrelson, who already had four hits, including a double in that game. But Uchek hit a home run to tie the game, and the Mets went on to score another run to win 5-4. But in 1968, he fell to third on the second base depth chart behind Kenny Boswell of the 69 Met fame, and Phil Lynns, the harmonica player, and batted only 182. During that offseason, Uchek was traded twice, first back to the Cardinals and then to the Phillies. He spent 1969 with the Phillies AAA Eugene Farm team, where he batted 246 in 127 games, then retired from baseball at age 27. For his MLB career, he batted 220 with 259 hits, 35 doubles, 11 triples, 22 homers, 108 RBIs, 108 runs scored, I should say, and he... No, 108 RBIs. I can't even read my own writing here. It's Monday morning. I should get a pass, right? And that was in 421 games. He died, unfortunately, on January 2nd, 2019 in Springfield, Missouri at the age of 76. So there you go, Jerry Uchek, once a Met, always a Met, and we just honored him. Now, as we do every day, we end the podcast with the answers to our trivia and Jeopardy questions of the day. The trivia question once again was, on July 4th, 1985, the Mets and Braves staged a classic 19-inning game won by the Mets 16-13. Who threw the final pitch of that game at 3:55 a.m.? Well, the correct answer is current Met broadcaster Ron Darling. Congrats to John Tierney on being the first to submit the correct answer. And then we go to today's final Jeopardy. There were two clues. Traded by the New York Mets to the Houston Astros with Roger Cedeno and Kyle Kessel in exchange for Derek Bell and Mike Hampton on December 23, 1999. He was the winning pitcher in the 1999 National League Championship Series Game 5 against the Braves. Who was he? Well, the correct answer is Octavio Dotel. Congrats to our good friend John Tierney on getting that one again. Good job, Mr. Tierney. And that's going to wrap up our podcast. No game today, but we'll have Met baseball to talk about tomorrow. As always, always fun stuff. A lot of things up my sleeve that we can talk about. So tune in tomorrow. Enjoy today. A little nippy out, but it's not raining. It's a sunny day, and a sunny day, even though it's Monday, is a good day. So enjoy today, and we'll catch you again tomorrow.
Meet the Mets, step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your kiddies, bring your wife. Guaranteed to have the time of your life, because the Mets are really sucking the ball. Knocking those home runs over the wall. East side, west side, everybody's coming down to meet the M-E-T-S Mets of New streets. Where do they go? To meet the Mets! Oh, they're hollering and cheering and they're jumping in their seats. Where do they go? To meet the Mets! All the fans are true to the orange and blue, so hurry up and come on down, 'cause we got ourselves a ball from the Mets of New York Town. Step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your kiddies, bring your wife. Guaranteed to have the time of your life, because the Mets.